FR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento River Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century. We're on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted by tonight myself, Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight we are going to be continuing on our conversation for the last time in our segment on this theme about love and Mother Earth. We're going to be talking with Dr. Jada White, a local educator and scientist who is currently working with the CSU Education, about her practical application of loving Mother Earth, as well as some information that will be helpful in educating our listeners on a way to have a positive impact on their environment and to have some consideration around how their choices impact the environment as well. Sure to be a thought-provoking hour. And we're going to ask for you listeners to call in and let us know what is going on with you. And Jada's going to have some specific questions on what we want to hear from you. So stay tuned. It's going to be a very thought-provoking hour. It's the number to call in is 530-895-1114. But before we jump right in, we are going to be listening to some amazing music by some dear beloved friends of mine who are calling themselves, and all of us really, the One Tribe Movement. And the song is titled, We Are In This Together.
Power. Is there a higher intelligence? What do you believe in?
This is what I believe. Every great religion in the world, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, essentially comes down to do unto others as you would like them to do unto you.
Yeah.
And what I have believed in my whole life, I believed it when I was a 22-year-old kid getting arrested in Chicago fighting segregation. I believed it in my whole life. Yeah. That we are in this together.
We are the one the world's been waiting for. Be the change, be the change. Yeah, every man was once a child, and every child has felt the rain. Feel the rain. Yeah, while we tripping on differences, what will it take to realize that we are all one? I am your father, I am your mother, I am your sister, I am your brother. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Peaceful warrior nation, right here and right now. Lift up the vibration, open your hands, open your heart. May we be like the water, let go of the fear, flow with the river. There is only
Babylon system. Can you feel the burn? Can you see the vision? Back to the roots where the people make decisions. Hey, hey, yeah, time for intervention. Come now on the medicine mission. Yes, yes, I, the healing of the nation. Make way for the leaders who will listen, listen, listen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Make way for the leaders who will listen, 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 listen. Hey, yeah, make way for the leaders who will listen, listen, listen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Make way for the leaders who will listen, 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 listen.
And that's just not words. The truth is, at some level, when you hurt, when your children hurt,
we are in this together.
Here is our chance, empower each other. Everyone must stand, return to the mother, return to the land, and love one another. Give a helping hand, cause our hands are only as strong as the hearts that wield them. Connected so deeply, now can you feel it?
Can you feel it?
Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West, at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. and till 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468. Welcome back, listeners, to Love in the 21st Century. I am Tamara Wickma, and I was so honored to play this song as an intro. It gets me going every time. One Tribe Movement, We Are in This Together, and just their application of Bernie Sanders in there, and really sending the message that it's all up to us. And just another shout out on their accord that they are on the Up to Us caravan right now, which is basically a musical movement to go out to rallies and protests across the nation to bring awareness and the heart message, the love message, the unifying message to the people that it's not about what divides us, but really what brings us together. So powerful, so peaceful. I love it. Awesome. Thank you. So we're going to continue on our jaunt here on Love and Mother Earth. So it seemed really appropriate to start there. And I want to just thank you so much, Jada, for being here today.
It's my pleasure and my honor to be here with you today.
Beautiful. And so today is our, as I mentioned previously, is our last segment on Love and Mother Earth. And Jada is such a perfect fit because she is such a shining ray of what it looks like to be living in accordance with the earth and really to be doing work that highlights the importance of paying attention to your environment. And I know from the beginning of our conversations, when we first were, our budding friendship was happening, that that was a big part of our conversation. So I just feel so privileged that now the listeners get to hear more of your practical wisdom, not just like, you know, your really thought-provoking philosophical knowledge around the environment and science, but also just your real, like, okay, where does the rubber meet the road sort of explanations.
I feel like the song that you played was the perfect example of my philosophy, because I truly believe, listening audience out there, that you are the one that we've been waiting for, that each one of us is unique, that we each have a part to play in this beautiful life that we're co-creating. And it's about stepping up and recognizing that our actions do create tomorrow. That's the motto for Chico State, right? Today creates tomorrow. And that is the truth. The actions that we take today, the thoughts, the words, the actions, are going to affect everybody else that we interact with. And we live in a consumer culture, and that consumer culture was created by humans. And we are humans too. And we have a capacity to shape our culture. And we have so many wonderful examples here in Chico. I have to first just step back and say, my ideas came from this community. I was raised in the North Valley. I was blessed to attend Paradise Elementary School and then to go to junior high and high school in Red Bluff, which was an education of a different sort, but also very valuable because I learned about ranching and I learned about some of the hunters and the fishers, which at first I was not open to because I didn't have a broad enough mind or perspective to recognize that those hunters and fishers were actually the best ecologists out there, that they were the ones who actually knew what the plants and animals were doing and were keeping track of the cycles. And so suddenly I realized that they were my advocates, they were my friends, they were my colleagues. And so we are all in this together, and whatever you think is your enemy, likely you have way more in common with that person than you think, and the reason why you're upset is because they're your mirror.
Definitely so, and so eloquently put, that connection that we often overlook in our environment. It's so important. So for our listeners, would you mind giving them a brief explanation of the work that you are doing right now?
Yeah, I'm very grateful, actually, to have an incredible opportunity to learn social science. So I was trained as a biologist. I started out doing salmon biology on the Sacramento River back in 1996 and 1997. I'm aging myself right now. but so I've been doing salmon biology for a long time. Then I was really blessed to go study coral reefs for a decade. This is because of the education that I received here in this North Valley. I had such an exquisite foundation from Butte College and Mercy High School and Brendos Junior High and Paradise Elementary School, among with all the rest of the community things that were happening, that I was able to travel the world. And during those travels, I learned about science and I learned about the process of science, and that what we know today is not going to be the same as what we know in 20 years, and it's constantly refining. But I also realized that my contribution to science was going to be tiny. But if I could contribute to education, we might actually have a chance. Because if everybody knew what the scientists knew, we wouldn't be in the problems. We wouldn't be seeing the problems are facing the challenges that we're facing today. And so I started focusing on education. I came back to Chico, which was my place of education, because this is where all the educators become educators. And that's what I needed to do. And so now I'm working in the science education department studying student learning. And so it's so different than studying plants and animals. But at the same time, it's I think the best thing for me to be focusing on, because what we want is an empowered citizen base that understands that this culture was created by people just like them, just like you. This, you know, we created our reality, and we have a capacity to change it in a sustainable direction very quickly if we would just each of us do our part. And I think that song reminded us that we do know what to do. Mm-hmm. And it's about tuning in to our own inner wisdom rather than expecting us to find that wisdom on the outside, you know, because absolutely, we all have that connection. And if we all listen to that little voice, we could have a revolution overnight. An evolution, not a revolution, evolution.
A revolving evolution.
Yes.
And I want to go back to one of the things that you said previously, which was about the motto of Chico State, which is today creates tomorrow. And decides tomorrow. Yeah. And one of the things that you just echoed as well about the presence in our, you know, decision making, and just the idea that I don't know that it's how amazingly common it is that individuals are considering their impact, not even on a global sense or even on a community sense or on a neighborhood sense, but just in the reality of what I'm deciding right now in this moment, my actions, my conversations, my lack thereof of action or conversation, what that's going to lead to tomorrow. It's not something that is, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems though we often are either focused on being completely present and not considering those actions whatsoever in the future, or we're completely naive to the reality that, yeah, we are so much in power and in control of what we are creating.
Right. I mean, yeah, you hit a really good point. And I think my education in coral reefs was a big reflection that I needed to pay attention more to my everyday habits. You know, while I was studying coral reefs, I learned about the carbon footprint, and we learned about the plastic gyres, and we learned about, you know, global change, you know, and just ocean acidification, some of these issues that our children are going to have to face. And I realized that at first I was very angry with the previous generation, which I think is a cycle that most people go through. And then I realized that it was totally unintended. Our grandparents and parents were doing exactly what they thought they were supposed to do given the information that they had. And now we have so much more information. So with that information comes a responsibility to implement it and to think not about just the direct effects of, oh, when I push this thing, it moves, but how does it moving now affect other things down the line? And that's where my research came into play. I studied indirect effects. Mm-hmm. And what I just talked about was a direct effect where you push something, that's the direct action. But then that thing that then pushes three other things, that's right. The indirect action. And so when we purchase something at the grocery store, depending on which company we're supporting, we're either supporting a big corporate giant that isn't considering people or the planet, or we're supporting someone who is. So every single time we purchase something, we are voting with our dollars.
Right.
Our dollars are the most important vote that we can make. So even though it might be convenient to run to Walmart and buy that thing that's super cheap from China, is that of benefit in the long run? That thing that was made in China without environmental regulations or without considering people's health or well-being or security or respect, you know, it's going to be thrown away. It's going to make our landfill grow. You know, is it of benefit? That convenience factor often has a long-term implication. And that's where we have a choice to be convenient and to leave our kids a big mess, or to have some principle and be grounded in ethical choices and make sure that we recognize that we are a conscious part of this culture and we are driving. We could be either driven or we can drive. It's our choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there's a couple things that you referenced in there, and I don't necessarily want to turn this into a super educational module on what exactly is happening to the world, because I mean that is important, though I feel that the element that this show reaches out to specifically is the heart of the matter. Like, why are we asking people to rise up and sort of rely on the fact that the people that are listening do have some context of what we're talking about? But just for the sake of kind of clarifying things, can you talk just very shortly about what ocean acidification is, what that means, and also the carbon footprint? Because I think that we hear those terms kind of like thrown around, but we're not really like really, really sure what those mean.
I'm happy to do so. So my carbon footprint as a coral reef biologist was ridiculously huge because I was traveling all over the world and flying all over the world. And so flying uses a lot of fossil fuels and contributes to the amount of carbon that goes into the atmosphere. The problem with ocean acidification, so carbon buildup in the atmosphere is what's changing, that's what's leading to global change and in terms of our climate change. Ocean acidification is a byproduct or an indirect effect that we hadn't considered, because as the CO2 in the atmosphere begins to build up, there's diffusion into the ocean, right? And so, unfortunately, when you add CO2 plus water, it creates carbonic acid. So it changes, and an extra H+. And so what it does is it changes the acidity, it changes the pH of the ocean. Now, this is very important for corals. This is very important for mollusks or snails and clams. This is very very important for anything with a calcareous shell, because having a different composition of calcium carbonate in the ocean and having a different availability changes the strength of the skeleton, changes the rate at which it erodes, changes how protected our reefs are, changes how fast our oysters grow. It changes a lot of things. And the fact that humans can have an impact on that system, a lot of people want to deny, but the evidence is so stark at this point that you're just, if you deny it, I don't know what to say. You're voting for the corporations. You know, that's all I can say. Right. The parasitic corporations that don't care about anything except for their own greed.
Right. And aside from, you know, that reality, I think that there is a lack of awareness or acceptance around the reality of the indirect effects that you're talking about, that we can walk around blindly with our eyes closed and pretend like whatever action I choose to take is not going to cause any further reactions in the world. But the reality is that just, you know, it's a game of telephone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything causes something else, like, mm-hmm. that you don't even think or plan to create. And I think a lot of times we like to think back and say, no, I wouldn't have done that if I knew that other thing, what is going to happen. But that's the reality, mm-hmm. is that we live in a time that we need to be very aware of our actions and our choices. And as Jada was sharing about our purchases at stores, so many things, so many times we want to just pretend as though, you know, the buck stops somewhere and that it's not going to continue to affect or support these corporations or environmental degradation that is actually happening. But the reality is that that's just a game that we want to play in our mind.
Yeah, there is no away. When you throw something away, there is no away. It goes somewhere. There's a consequence for you throwing it away. And I a good friend of mine, Jeff Chicola, said that quote. He was a city manager here in Chico, and it really hit me. He was part of the big changes out at the out at Neal Road waste facility, trying to make it more sustainable. And I think that his experiences out there just really undermined how much there is no away. That every time we take on trash, we are creating waste for the next generation to deal with. And the Pacific plastic gyres, so what really changed my mind and brought me home to Chico were two things. One, we lost two runs of salmon, the winter run and the spring run. Winter run became endangered / extinct, and spring run became endangered. And so that happened in the 10 years that I was gone. And that was kind of amazing that we could lose two salmon runs in such a short period of time. And then two, I realized that, you know, the plastic impact was so vast. I went on a remote expedition to the South Tuamotus, which is a remote archipelago in French Polynesia. And we were at 5 atolls and uninhabited by humans. And the amount of waste that we were finding on the shores was outrageous and overwhelming and saddening and infuriating because we were in a pristine location 21 degrees south of the equator. We were just past. And so it was just amazing that we're finding all of this trash, and that's really was my call to action, because I realized that humans are no longer under natural selection, that our communities have gotten so good at creating our own energy and so good at diverting the water that we're not under natural selection. We're under an artificial selection that's based on our education, our laws, our policies, and our media. Media plays a big role, so be careful what you imbibe. They don't call it programming for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I realized that I heard a term, it's called ego system, and it just struck so well because I feel like that is what we've created, is this ego system. And sometimes, depending on how the ego system is constructed, it can either be beneficial to the ecosystem, to the world, or not. And one of the reasons I love Chico is because we are doing our best to make our ego system be as healthy and happy for the planet and for each other. Mm-hmm. And we're also asking ourselves to be our authentic selves. And that's one of the things I love the most most about Chico, because every place has a selective pressure, and the selective pressure we have here is highly beneficial and highly mutualistic. And so kudos to Chico.
But it's still all about having that artificial or human designed ecosystem in working in accordance with the natural system. The reality is that they are not necessarily most of the time working in unison. We live in a perpetual summer reality, perpetual summer culture that really just focuses on youth and production. And there's natural cycles for a reason. There's a lot we can learn from the environment and from the natural cycles.
That's a really beautiful point, Tamara, and honoring our elders and honoring the letting the children be children instead of letting them grow up so quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And just like allowing each stage to have its place and to really honor it. That's really beautiful.
Yes.
You reminded me of one of my favorite Kindyisms. Kindy's my best friend. Yesterday was her birthday. Shout out to one of my favorite Leos. And she said something back when we were about 18 or 19, and it changed my life. She said, "I'm sick of keeping up with the Joneses. Last time I checked, they were in debt up to their eyeballs and on antidepressants. I'm going to do something better. I'm going to keep up with the Greens, and I'm going to find my own way that is in accordance with the world." Now, granted, she's Maidu, Mountain Maidu, and so she has a lot of reason for feeling that way, but we all, I think, really feel that way, no matter what our heritage is. Our heritage is of this planet.
Right.
And so I think that personal pledges is really where we have a chance to take a stand, to be part of the change, to be the change we wish to see in the world. And I wanted to just take a moment to honor one of the local changes in our world. Derby King Jones was, I'm sure you guys have heard of him, and if you haven't heard of him, you've seen him, and if you haven't seen of him, you've likely at least seen a picture of him on a t-shirt or something. But Derby was an incredible local legend. He used to hang out at Naked Lounge for years, and he even graced their t-shirts. I didn't meet him at Naked Lounge. I met him at Has Beans by the Creek after the smoking ban went into effect downtown. And he's just this amazing bicycle guru. He got his nickname Derby King from Gary Fisher, and he was a big proponent of bicycles and the evolution of bicycles. He was also a mathematician and a philosopher. And I bring him up because he passed 2 weeks ago, and we're going to have a bicycle celebration for his 75th birthday on August 30th. And so look for that public Facebook event, August 30th, Derby King Bicycle 75th birthday celebration. And I just wanted to also leave a little bit of the wisdom that he shared with me, because I was just coming back from the coral reefs, and I was really conflicted between our culture and what I had experienced in the ocean, and the peace and the mutualism and the win-win that I had been exposed to in Polynesia, and that culture of really loving and respectful reality that honored both Sky Father and Earth Mother simultaneously. And that was an insight that I felt was very vital. But so Derby and I were having this conversation, and I was expressing my discontent, and he just looked at me so simply, and he just said, "You're talking about the positive sum game." And I was like, "Okay, do tell," and he's like, "Well, the world operates now, our culture operates under a negative sum game. And that means that the world is a pie in the middle, and we've all been taught to compete for our piece of the pie. And it doesn't ever feel right or good, because it's not the way the world actually operates. That's a competitive model or a parasitic model. In ecology, we would say it's a win-lose model. Someone's going to lose. Someone's going to win. It's an adaptive strategy. It's not the most stable, and it's certainly not the most fun. Right? The positive sum game, in contrast, is when he said the way that the world actually operates and the way that we actually feel good, and what I observed with the coral reefs was what you and I can do on our own is less than what you and I could do together with those same resources. Essentially, the acronym for TEAM, Together Everyone Achieves More. And so this was the disjunct that I was feeling. I was feeling like, oh, I want to be part of a positive sum model, a positive sum game. I want to be part of a culture that is win-win. And Derby gave me the words. And so I will always celebrate him for his positive sum game. And I hope you guys all come out to celebrate him on August 30th for the 75th birthday ride.
Beautiful. I also would like for you to share a little bit about what Derby's impact was on this community.
Oh,
because I think that there's that information too. Because I think for a lot of people, such as myself, knew Derby, didn't know really how big of an impact he was on the recreational life of Chico.
Yeah, so Derby was Derby King, Holland Jones by birth, Derby King by culture, was given his nickname by Gary Fisher. And if you go to his website, derbykingcycles.com, you can learn more about it and celebrate him posthumously. But he's just an amazing character that really contributed to the evolution of bikes. And then he's also an incredible mathematician, and he had a master's, I believe, in economics. So he was very educated, and I saw him tutoring many random people. He was very happy to share mathematics, and he believed, like I do, that mathematics is a language. It is the universal language, and the more we can empower people to speak the language of math, the more we're going to be on the same page. And so, yeah, he's a philosopher, he's a mathematician, he's an economist, he's a bicycle builder, mm-hmm. and he's a character who believed in his values and stuck by them. And that was the most important thing he could do for me, was empower me to also be a character, to have character, mm-hmm. not to just follow. I mean, there are as many opinions as there are people, and I checked it, we're at 7.4 billion right now, and counting upwards. So if we just follow the culture, it's like flotsam in a storm. You're getting tossed all around. The culture is always shifting. So Derby encouraged me, so many of my Chicoan icons have encouraged me to live with principle, to have ethical values that are driving our daily choices. It's not about being cool. It's about what the legacy you're going to leave. And is that legacy one that you are going to be proud of and that your kids are going to be proud of? And is that legacy not just directly going to be positive, but is it indirectly going to be positive too? Like, mm-hmm. what's the consequences? And I feel like we have so many great examples of people who are thinking like that in Chico that are doing great things for our community. And that's why I say you are the change. Each one of us is unique. We all have something to contribute. It's not one of us that can do this. It's all of us.
I guess one other thing that I really wanted to throw in there is that Derby was intricately involved in the creation of the mountain bike, which I'm not sure that too many people know.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't know all of the details of it, so I don't want to pretend like I have an authority that I don't. Mm-hmm. I know that he was a big contributor to the wheel, mm-hmm. and the wheel itself, and the ability for the spokes to handle the weight, mm-hmm. and to be able to do all that stuff. So I would guess that maybe Greg DeGauvier or one of the other bicycle gurus. I'm a biker, but I don't pretend to be the bicycle guru.
To be involved in that aspect of the creation of something that is so enjoyed by so many people that live in this area.
Yes.
He's touched so many lives that people don't even know.
Right. And he was just that character. I mean, if anybody saw the t-shirt, I noticed him on the t-shirt before I actually met him. And so that's an interesting awareness, and our conversation happened very organically just by being in the same coffee shop. But I just think he's a great example of living your truth and making sure that your truth is empowering and positive to others and taking responsibility for how your truth affects others.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Derby, for all you added to this community and how many people you've inspired from that. And on that note of practical and daily choices that we can make, do we want to talk a little bit more about that aspect?
Yes, I think so. I got a big download. So I'm just going to admit right now that all of my best ideas are just me tapping into the collective consciousness. I don't believe that I'm some genius that can somehow figure this out. I actually think we're all having these same ideas, and some of us are more outspoken than others, for better or for worse. you know, but this one big download I received a couple of weeks ago was that this throwaway culture really erodes our self-respect, our respect for others, and our respect for the planet. And that's because our daily needs are constantly having to be met. And when our grandparents, you know, my grandparents lived on a ranch, and, you know, they had everything they needed, and they maintained everything. And so, you know, daily needs were met, and there wasn't a lot of comparison to what your neighbor had because they were all well made. Everybody's was well made. It was all about having everything be well made and maintained and maintainable.
It needed to last.
It was built to last, exactly. When I was a kid, things were built to last still, which, mm-hmm. again, I'm aging myself.
I think it was back in those days that they still gave out glass cups at McDonald's, you know?
Right.
Like a glass one. Like, I still own one that is made out of glass, was made in 1985. That is not the culture we live in now.
Right.
We would never see those things given out for free.
And that shift happened very quietly, and it happened without anybody really paying attention to it. And it was kind of amazing. We had a little blip of awareness in the 90s when I was in high school, and we found out about the sweatshops and Nike. And so there was like a slight little, but before then, we just trusted our companies. We really, truly trusted our companies. And now, if you look at a product, I was talking to Tamara about this before the show. If you look at a product, often what you see is no phthalates, no sodium lauryl sulfates, no this, no that, no this. These are chemicals that have been banned in other countries, but we've been so deregulated in the U.S. that you actually have to be a very conscious consumer in order to not inadvertently poison yourself, which is really sad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have a parasitic economy, unfortunately. And so it's one of those terrible realities that can get overwhelming if you dwell on it, so don't dwell on it. Instead, be solution-oriented and focus on the fact that this culture was created by people. It's changed drastically in the last 30, 40 years. We are people too, and we have capacity to change it just like they did.
Absolutely. So, talking more about some other practical things that people can do.
Personal pledges,
yeah.
Yes, so I feel like that's really what it boils down to. And this is where we would love our audience to call in, because we want to know what the Chicoans are doing personally to be the change. And, I mean, some of the things that I've done, for 3 years, I only rode my bicycle because I wanted to see what it was like. That was a big challenge, and I'm really grateful for the challenge. Being a biker it's easy in Chico. It's not that easy other places, but it's also challenging. And then I made a personal pledge when I was studying coral reefs not to use single-use containers. After seeing all the aftermath, I'm trying to ban plastic completely, but it's very challenging. And so I made a personal pledge not to use reusable containers like coffee cups. And it was difficult because sometimes I would forget my coffee cup. So I had to create my own personal penalty, which means that if I didn't bring my coffee cup, I had to buy a new reusable container to the tune of, you know, $10 to $20. So unfortunately, I'm human, and I had to do that a few times before I learned. And essentially now I don't get coffee or any beverage unless I have my own reusable container. I mean, I'm human, and there's times that that means I make mistakes. But those personal pledges have helped the landfill, and it has created less waste. And I'm, you know, we need to do our best. Same with plastic containers. Like, I went to Upper Crust earlier today, and I got two plastic containers, and I was like, oh man, now I got to deal with these plastic containers. What am I going to do with it? I decided I could reuse them for craft supplies, and they can be like my little, you know, bead holders or, you know, whatever. And so it's just getting creative with our waste and taking responsibility for it and doing our best to be zero waste, and planting a garden, eating from your garden, supporting local as much as you can.
If you're tuning in, this is KZFR 90.1 FM. We're talking about love and Mother Earth with Dr. Jada White, talking about practical ways to influence your relationship with the environment. Remind me again, what we're calling them? Personal pledges. Mm-hmm. What are your personal pledges towards your relationship with the planet? How are you contributing? You can call in 895-1114 to join the conversation, or just sharing something inspiring that you want to share about your relationship with Mother Earth. 895-1114 will get you right on the air. I do want to let the listeners know about this really amazing book that I believe it's probably now in its fourth edition, as I'm looking at its third edition right now. But it was created by a doctorate gentleman in Minnesota, I want to say, but that could be totally wrong. And he studied corporations all around the world and their influence on the way they were producing products, their relationship to the environment, the relationship to their employees, and basically went through and graded them all. And so it's called the Better World Shopping Guide. And anybody know who Charles Wathun is? He is a Chico icon as well. He travels around with his, I don't know, person-sized posters and sets them up at events and educates people about what's actually going on in the world. And this is one of the books that he sells, the Better World Shopping Guide. And it's just so amazing. It's such a user-friendly sort of thing that you can flip open to any page, or, you know, you can be really specific on what you're looking at. But I opened up right now to electronics. And basically, it grades the companies, the well-known companies anyhow, that are selling these products A through F, meaning F, they're just off the board in terms of who and what they're doing to influence the environment, and then up to an A. There is no electronics that are in the A category. Surprise, surprise. You know, I think we all kind of knew that on a deeper consciousness level. And actually, Apple, Toshiba, and Kodak are the ones that are in the top range, the B-plus range of products in the electronics. So it's a cheap book to find, and it's something you could actually carry around in your purse if you're shopping at, you know, the co-op or any store and see what your purchase is about to impact. Because the reality is that it's the culture we live in. Every dollar is a vote. Every dollar is your intention going forth and saying, this is something that I support. And if you don't want that to be the case, then it's about bringing more presence to what you're consuming and how you're impacting. And yeah, it's kind of challenging at first, because just going to the right store, you know, like I mentioned, the co-op, which I love, does not make a foolproof method. I just want to let you know that too. There's a lot of companies out there now that actually do double dip, we'll say. They are selling in the major corporate stores, and then they're also selling in the more natural food, quote-unquote, stores, and they change the brand name, and they tweak the product a bit to fit within the requirements that it has to be in order to be considered organic or non-conventional farming, but it doesn't mean they're a good company. It actually, unfortunately, means that they're just being sneaky. And they're also thinking that they're passing underneath the radar because, you know, generally speaking, people are so active in their lives, they don't have the time to investigate what is actually going on in the stores and what products that they are being offered. And so you think, I'm going to a quote-unquote natural food store, or I'm in the natural food section of the store, therefore, these companies must really care. You still really have to be conscious about your decisions and bring a lot of awareness to it. Fortunately, this gentleman, Ellis Jones, spent decades researching these companies, and he does update the book. So as I was showing this book to Jada previously, right before the show, the Better World Shopping Guide, she pointed out that, you know, companies are bought and sold, so their practices change. So that's why it's also really important to keep up with whether or not those companies are still practicing good things or not. Thankfully for Ellis Jones, he has done a lot of the research for us. Thank you, Ellis.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yes. Yeah, and I also something came up while you were speaking. I realized that a lot of people think in order to make good consumer choices, you have to be wealthy. And I'm just going to dissipate that right now by letting you know that I've been really poor for the last couple years. this is the first time I have full-time employment in a while. And in some ways, being economically disadvantaged was very beneficial to me because it taught me how to save money while saving the planet. And I've been creating a blog for the last 3 years called Just That, Save Money While Saving the Planet. And it's got a bunch of different tips, and pretty soon it will go live. But it's little things like, I learned to refill my soap containers. And that seems silly. It seems like such a silly thing to do. But Dr. Bronner's, which is what I use for a lot of my cleaning for self and house, is kind of expensive. And when you buy it bulk, you save multiple dollars. And you also just saved a container from going to the landfill. Mm-hmm. It's a win-win, you know? And so there's, and buying bulk, suddenly I needed to buy bulk because it's what I could afford. But I also realized I was creating a lot less waste by buying bulk. I wasn't having all the containers. And so, sometimes that curse of being poor is actually a blessing because it's getting us out of the broken cycles that we were in. And it's making us recognize that, our decisions do matter, and what we do today does decide tomorrow.
Absolutely. And it's a personal choice. It is an intention that is set. A lot of this is really big, and it can be challenging to even consider, like, how am I going to start being so aware of all the things that I'm buying and not using reusable cups and bringing my own containers for things. This is like, whoa, this is a lot.
One step at a time.
Yes. And that's why the personal pledge is so important, because there's nobody else holding you accountable but yourself. But once you make that pledge, like when Jada told me, I don't use coffee cups. Like, I always bring my own cup. And if I don't, then I buy another one, or I don't get coffee. I was like, whoa. That is so inspiring. That was just that's just her choice. No one's like, Jada, you cannot have coffee. Jada just has that much principle within herself that she's going to do that because that's what she believes in. That it was inspiring for me to be like, I think I could do that. I think I could, bring my own cup. And if I don't, then not get coffee. And like, I admit there was a couple times in this last year, since Jada and I have become closer friends, that I have used a reusable cup. But I think about it every time I do it now. And I definitely, when I leave the house and I know that I'm going to get something to drink, if I'm going to stop somewhere, I'm very conscious about having something in the car or grabbing, another container that was already in the car. And it's that simple, just choosing one thing and holding that intention with yourself. And you'll be surprised how much it'll just creep up and show up in your life. It's not about taking on every one of these things, because mm-hmm. that is just, it's setting you up to fail, because you're going to get so overwhelmed by the idea. You might be really ambitious at the first week and be doing really awesome and amazing. But the first time that you do not do what you have set out to do, all comes crashing down. Might as well not do it all. And you're right back to square one and where you were 2 weeks ago. Maybe even worse off, because you're like, well, what's it all for anyway?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to just set one thing that you really feel is doable for yourself. Something that, for me, like the coffee cup thing, is such a practical, easy thing. And how many people that are listening, how many people that we know that are drinking coffee every morning, that are probably going to a coffee shop, just that one thing, how much that would save from going to the landfill? Because come on, let's be real. That cup is not doing anything else.
Right.
But serving your coffee for maybe an hour longer, and then it's getting discarded.
Right. And what did it take to create that coffee cup? And then how long is it going to take to break it down? And those are those indirect effects that, we're taught not to think about. We have a culture of lack, which is that basically we're always wanting, needing the next newest thing. And so I think we have an obligation and a responsibility to define what makes us happy, to define what is success. Because if everybody believes that success is having a huge house and multiple cars and a boat, guess what? We don't have enough planets to make that for everybody. So that's going to be not attainable. So we have to simplify. And I do believe that the more you know, the less you need, because it starts to become very clear that, wow, what I need is quality time with my friends and family, mm-hmm. and clean air and clean water and delicious food and wonderful music provided by KZFR and art and celebration and culture and praising this beautiful world that we live in and taking care of it and just recognizing that we have a role as stewards of this planet. That is our role. We're not separate from animals. We are part of the world, and our role is to care for it.
Absolutely. And if you would like to share your personal pledges with us on Love in the 21st Century, we would so much appreciate to hear what you have going on. You can go to the Facebook page, Love in the 21st Century. If you are not an internet person, feel free to call 895-0131. Let them know you're leaving a message for Love in the 21st Century. We love to hear from our listeners. It's what it's about. I mean, this conversation isn't necessarily just for Jada and I or any particular people that's on the air. It's supposed to be a community conversation, a community invitation to be part of a greater conversation that, and hopefully in theory, is affecting people out there in the world. And I wanted to read this little meme that came to mind when Jada was talking about the plastic or the cups and what it took to make it. And I think about it whenever I talk about the impact of creation of sort of these convenience products, things that are specifically made for our convenience, not for any other purpose. It's pretty amazing that our society has reached a point where the effort necessary to extract oil from the ground, ship it into a refinery, turn it into plastic, shape it appropriately, truck it to a store, buy it, and bring it home is considered to be less effort than it takes to just wash the spoon when you're done with it. And it has a picture of a little plastic spoon. Because, like, come on, that's where we're at. Like, it's more convenient. It's easier to grab that plastic spoon than it is to have a real spoon. Wow.
So you just reminded me of a conversation that I had. I was fortunate to be at the American Association for Physics Teachers / Physics Education Research Conference 2 weeks ago. And I was having a conversation with a German scientist. And he reiterated what one of my other German scientist friends had said, which is, America's biggest problem is that you are too big. You can hide your problems from your people. And I just was floored because I thought that's really pretty accurate. In Germany or in any places where there's no extra space, they have to be efficient. They have to, because mm-hmm. there's no choice. They don't have the luxury of being wasteful. Mm-hmm.
which is a luxury.
Right. So with that, I would say the next step in our culture is to say privilege breeds responsibility. And I just have to say that I recognize I've been very privileged. And part of the reason I want to live a principled life is because I want to give back. I want to make sure that the kids from our community have the opportunity to travel and see the world and take on and come up with their own personal ethics and to form their character and to know that that each one of us is part of the solution. Because we do another Kindyism, we encourage whatever we allow. And so if you see somebody, you know, if you see something happening that you know isn't right, allowing it to happen is just like doing it yourself, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
And so we have to somehow know that our choices matter and surround ourselves with people who make good choices and just listen to that inner voice, the Jiminy Cricket inside.
Right. And what would your personal pledge be? Just leaving that thought with all of you. What would you, if you were to take one on, not saying you're going to, but if you were, what would it be? And thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Jada, so much for being here, sharing your insights.
It's my honor and my pleasure. I'm grateful to be part of Chico.
Ecotopia coming up next with Steve and Susan Chudy. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet.
Perfect.
And we will be back with you next Tuesday. Going to leave you here with a little music from Amber Lilly, a beautiful artist from Kauai, singing about the waters. Oh.
ago yo yemaya, yemaya oh, ago yo yemaya, yemaya oh, ago yo yemaya, yemaya.
Here at the DNC, congratulating former First Lady, former U.S. Senator from the state of New York, former Secretary of State, former female, former human, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, for finally breaking the glass ceiling. Beware the falling shards. Unfortunately, by way of doing so, she was forced to morph into a political cyborg, which is a problem. And here's another one. We know her too well. She's been on the national stage for 25 years, since 1991, when her husband first ran for president. Which means there's two ways of looking at it, and I don't know how this works. Either she has more baggage than the first United flight out of O'Hare after a freak spring blizzard, or she's like a single sardine thrown over the wall of a cat sanctuary with all the meat stripped from the scandal bone. A major reason I'm glad she's running is she pisses Republicans off so much, it's fun to watch. Seriously, it's biochemical. You remember what they said about her when she was First Lady. She's a liar, she's a thief, she's a lesbian, she murdered Vince Foster with her bare hands and then ate him. That's when she was First Lady. As opposition nominee, the kid gloves are coming off. Originally, the Clintons had three children, but sold two to a Bangkok brothel, to which Bill makes twice yearly visits. The GOP hates her so bad, the rest of us can taste it. All you gotta do is mention her name. They start twitching like a hamster duct-taped to a rotor tiller. Actually make cartoon noises. Try it. walk up to your favorite conservative and just whisper the words, President Hillary. I'm just looking forward to seeing the little trickle of blood coming out of Bill O'Reilly's ears every night. Sparks shooting out of his eyes. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
Don't miss Jim Hightower, Will Durst, and Mary Standish comedy at the Chico Women's Club, Thursday, August 25th,